Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
And just a reminder that there are lists of declared candidates included in the constituency profiles. That's on the RTE News website, You'll find them at rte.ie/constituencies. Now, as experts warn, the UN's COP climate talks are no longer fit for purpose in dealing with a fast-moving climate crisis, and concerns mount that the conference could be close to collapse. Global youth delegates have been calling on world leaders to protect their future. Well, for more, we're joined by Sumaya Mohammed, who's a first-year law student at University College Cork, and also Dr. Hannah Daly, who's a lecturer in sustainable energy at UCC. And thank you both for joining us. Sumaya, I'll start with you. You've been over in Baku at the COP29 talks, I know, for the last few days. You're one of a number of climate youth delegates who are there. What has your experience been like so far?
Well, getting here was a journey itself. and I think that having young people here is so important, but it's quite difficult for young people to even get here in the first place. Mm-hmm. I think that we are inheriting a climate crisis that we did not create, and all articles are indicating that 2024 is on track to be one of the hottest years on record, which is surpassing the 1.5 degrees warming threshold. And I think that young people bring a unique perspective and energy, and we're more aware of like the latest scientific developments and the technological solutions related to climate change than it seems that negotiators are. And I think that young people really need a space at these tables. But I don't think it's accessible, not only just to young people, but for civil society in general.
Right.
And it's quite difficult.
And you know, Sumaya, we've heard a lot of criticism of this COP, as we have other COPs in the past. But we've heard about lobbying going on. We've heard about those in charge of the conference trying to cut deals for fossil fuel exploration. I mean, do you feel despondent about the role that COP plays?
I think that it is a flawed system, but it's a system that we have. I think the fact that fossil fuel lobbyists here, there's around over 1,700 of them, are registered, which are outnumbering the number of delegations of almost any country who are attending COP this year. I think this overwhelming presence of fossil fuels are raising really serious concerns about who are influencing these negotiations and who are actually making these decisions about how to fix our climate. And it's quite concerning. It's quite dystopian to see.
Can I ask you how you first became interested in climate change and climate action?
Yes. So I got involved in climate action when I was 12 years old. So I was privileged enough to receive a climate education in my school. And I was always interested in kind of environment, but I didn't really know a lot about the climate crisis. So one day I entered this, one teacher called for a meeting, and I went, and it was quite overwhelming because I kind of really learned that day about, oh, we are actually in a global crisis because we're heating up our climate through our irresponsible actions. And from then I started becoming way more involved, and I felt this duty of responsibility that it wasn't, and which is not fair upon reflection for a 12-year-old to feel, or for any child to feel. And from there, we got involved in organizing climate protests in Cork. We thought maybe 300 people would show up, but 5,000 people came. And I was privileged enough to be with a great group of people. And we co-founded the organization, the Students Climate Action Network. And from there, we organized a bunch of school-based approaches in regards to making sure that everybody is aware of their right to receive a climate education and beyond.
And your family, Sumaya, is from Somalia. And can you tell us how climate change has impacted their life?
Yes, well, Somalia's main economy is mainly based on agriculture. And as we can see, Somalia is facing unprecedented changes in their climate. The droughts are going on longer, or there's monsoons, and it is absolutely awful to hear and to see how their lives are being flipped upside down because of a problem that they did not create. But I feel that some of my family are thankfully privileged enough to not be facing as much as the issues as other people are facing in Somalia, like in the refugee places in Somalia. Some of them can't stay there as waterborne diseases forming due to all the rainfall. Some of them can't don't have any money to because of their all their money is gone because of their main source of income was their agriculture. And I think it makes it so much more personal for me, and it makes it so much more urgent, because in Ireland we don't really realize our privilege, that we don't actually, we see effects of climate change, but it's not the same in any capacity as they're facing.
And do you feel that in Ireland that we are making attempts and overtures at tackling climate change, but the reality is that maybe it's fallen off the radar somewhat?
I think unfortunately it has. I think that's not me saying that people don't care about climate change. I really do believe that there is a lot of people do care, but I feel like it's not in the forefront of people's minds. And I think that this is a lot to do with media coverage on climate is not as strong anymore. I think this is also because of how other many conflicts are happening across the world and how that's also taking up a lot of the media. And I think if it's not in sight, it's not in mind for a lot of people, and which is really unfortunate. And also in regards to youth activism, I think we've seen a kind of down, we don't see a lot of protests happening anymore because they simply just don't work. They do work, but they're not creating as much action as needed, as urgently as needed. And I think that people translate that to youth not caring about it anymore, which is so far from the truth, because there's so much work going on behind the scenes that youth are doing people are doing in regard to climate change.
Well, Sumaya, thank you for joining us this morning from Baku. That's Sumaya Mohammed, who's a first-year law student at University College Cork. And also on the line, I have Dr. Hannah Daly, also from UCC. And Hannah is a lecturer in sustainable energy. Hannah, thank you for being with us. The COP itself has been described as being stuck on a knife edge. Some people say that it's foundering. I mean, there does seem to be a lot of frustration this time round at the lack of progress at the conference.
Yes, despite all its shortcomings, COP, I suppose, is the international process that we have. And despite the presence of fossil fuel lobbyists and the presence of petrostates having such an influence on the proceedings, so it's what we hear from Sumaya there, is that it's really essential to keep bringing global attention to this. And this is a chance, 1-2 weeks a year, where the world pays attention to the huge gulf between where the place where governments have committed to taking us in the Paris Agreement 9 years ago, countries all across the world committed to taking action to limiting global warming to well below 2 degrees and striving to keep warming to below 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial levels. And then also COP gives a voice to the people who are being affected by climate change. And it's so easy to forget that it is the young people and it is people in vulnerable developing countries. So you have the likes of Vanuatu or other small island developing states whose whole countries are being threatened with wiping out, being wiped out in the face of rising sea levels, bringing their voice to the fore and making sure that global leaders are held to account for the gulf between where they've committed to and what actions they're taking to actually cut emissions. Because, of course, we don't need any more global negotiations, or we don't need a COP for countries to start actually taking ambitious action to cut greenhouse gas emissions. You know, the more we emit, the more finance will be needed, the more funds for loss and damage will be needed to clean up and to compensate those who have been affected. The greater damage will be caused by climate change. Really, the main thing that should be on the mind of every government is how we can cut greenhouse gas emissions quickly at home.
You'd wonder how that message can get through if, as Sumaya tells us, there are 1,700 lobbyists registered to be there in the midst of everybody at COP29.
Yes, and we have to keep bringing that back to what that means at home. In Ireland, we spend many billions of euros every year on importing fossil fuels. And those fossil fuels are right now essential to keep our transport system running, to keep our electricity powered, to heat our homes and to fuel our industry. But those fossil fuels, that fossil fuel dependence, not only keeps our greenhouse gas emissions high, but it makes us very vulnerable to energy insecurity. It makes us, it gives us energy poverty, and it threatens the health and the well-being of people as well. So we did a study in UCC that was recently published. It was just published last week, that looked at our own national emissions target, our own carbon budget that we've committed to nationally, that was brought about in the 2021 Climate Act, that's supposed to put us on path to cutting emissions in line with our Paris Agreement commitments. And the focus of this paper was through a conversation I had with someone last year in UCC. We've been supporting the Climate Change Advisory Council in its role in recommending carbon budgets to government since 2021. We look at different future energy system pathways in line with different climate mitigation scenarios. And the conversation I had with this person was well, you know, they suggested, wouldn't it be cheaper for us to cut emissions more steeply after 2030? You know, at that time, technologies will be cheaper and all these blockages in terms of planning and, you know, the infrastructure and maybe, you know, the will of society will be unleashed and we won't face these blockages anymore. So the question we set out to ask in this paper was whether we can catch up later, whether, you know, the fact that we're on track to overshooting our carbon budgets now, will it be cheaper to meet mm-hmm. those carbon budgets after 2030? I suppose the answer is that it won't be possible to catch up. It'll either be very costly to catch up, or catching up will come with huge trade-offs that will make it very infeasible. Yeah,
not to mention the fines that we might face too for missing our targets, which we know are very high. Hannah, we need to leave it there, but thank you very much for joining us. That's Dr. Hannah Daly, and earlier we heard from Sumaya Mohammed. Coming up next, we're going to be talking about the weather, and we are expecting a cold snap. That's after this.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.